You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. Call or text. The number is the same at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment. If you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter, coming up in about a half an hour after the 10:30 news, Pam Yonke, the fabulous farm babe, will be joining us, and then we'll wrap up the show as we always do with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today, the Testy Turkeys edition. Stick around for that. Right now, though, we are going to talk about Fair Maps in Wisconsin. Nicole Gabriel is with the Fair Maps Coalition. She's a volunteer and relational organizer. Nicole, good morning. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
For having me. I'm great.
Excellent. Wonderful. Thank you. So where are we with maps? We know that one set of maps in Wisconsin has gotten changed, but now we are looking at more changes. So where are we exactly on fair maps in Wisconsin, legislative maps?
The legislative maps? Yeah. So our legislative maps were recently redrawn in 2024. Our state Supreme Court found that those maps were unconstitutional based on non-contiguity, which basically means that there were various districts in those maps that were not physically connected to each other. So as it stands right now, our legislative maps are maybe not completely fair, but they're fairer.
Than they were previously.
However, the process that we have in place, like the process that gave us those gerrymandered maps in the first place, is the same process that we have in place right now, and the same process that we could potentially have in place after 2030 when our maps are redrawn. So if we don't have a different process in place by 2030, we could just end up with the same gerrymandered maps we started with. And as for our congressional maps, those weren't touched.
Right.
The congressional maps are still gerrymandered.
So from what we've seen coming out since the passing of the new map structure for Wisconsin, what is being done to secure that we don't go through this again? Because, I mean, those maps were just changed, and now we're less than a few years away from doing it all over again. So what is the goal for Wisconsin as far as making fair, you know, I want to say safe maps, right? But just so we're not doing this over and over, or every 10 years we're changing the maps and 5 years later we're back in the courts. What is being done to help make this process consistent and easier?
Well, right now the Wisconsin Fair Maps Coalition is working with the League of Women Voters. We actually have a group of volunteers from the League of Women Voters that have drafted a proposed piece of Fair Maps legislation. It's called an Independent Redistricting Commission legislation. We don't have a bill number quite yet, but they have drafted this proposed piece of legislation based on how we've seen other states successfully kill their gerrymander. So for example, states like Arizona, Colorado, and Michigan. And what the, sorry, my cat wants to join the redistricting
Not
conversation
a problem.
Here.
Every voice counts. Every voice counts, Nicole.
Everyone gets to be heard.
Yes.
Everyone gets to be
he
heard.
He loves to talk about redistricting.
Everyone gets to be purred. Yeah.
Oh.
Dumb joke. Sorry, go on.
Oh, no, that's okay. So, yeah, what the League of Women Voters Ad Hoc Redistricting Committee has done is they've kind of Frankensteined a Wisconsin model based off of best practices that they've taken from those other states that have successfully implemented an independent redistricting commission. And what an independent redistricting commission is it's an just like it sounds, it's a commission completely independent of the legislature that draws the maps, and it's comprised of citizen commissioners, so no more politicians drawing the voting maps that secures their own seats.
That's a really important point, folks, that I think just needs to be repeated. Do we want our elected officials to be the ones who get to decide where their district is? They don't get to pick their voters. We get to pick our representatives. And by allowing our politicians to have a voice in this on all sides, because we've seen what's happened in Illinois, that's very heavily gerrymandered. And I don't think a lot of Wisconsinites want that here either. But it's about, again, are we going to allow our politicians to pick their voters, or is it going to be the other way around, the way it's supposed to be?
And I think the examples you brought up is really good, Nicole, because, you know, one, we have, you have, I'm not doing anything, I'm talking to you, but like you have examples of not only the program working, but you've got it from two states that when you say, what do you think of Colorado? Most people are going to say it's, quote, blue. And you say, what do you think about Arizona? Most people are going to say it's red. So what we see is two very different examples, two different states using the same idea to help create a more stable system of making sure that our voices are represented properly. Because I worked in small government in 2009 and 2010. And I watched our city administrator go through his comments on what the map should look like. And he said to me at one point, he goes, I've pored over these maps for weeks. I know they're not going to listen to me at all, because they have, those politicians had their own agenda. And so we do, what we do is we take that away from them and we put it in, as you said, Nicole, independent individuals.
Take it out of their hands.
Have the best interests of the people in mind versus a party. Hopefully, hopefully.
Hopefully. Yep.
And in those states in Arizona and Colorado where they did this, Nicole, where did they get these people from? I mean, were these volunteers? Did they volunteer to be on the Maps Commission? I'm just curious.
Well, they are paid. So they are paid commissioners, and it's basically just residents from the state. So anybody who, at least based on our model, anyone who is of voting age can apply. And there are certain things that can disqualify them. For example, if they're like an immediate family member of a current politician or something like that.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So there are certain things that can disqualify them from the commission, but basically it's just regular citizens. So we want what those states have done and what we want for Wisconsin is for anybody who's a registered voter in Wisconsin can apply for this commission and be considered.
Okay. I mean, we're talking about these, but there's also, of course, in the news, we see a lot about the congressional maps as well. And it's, as far as I know, if I'm correct, they want to try to get this done before April. So it's like more fair. That's
more
not
balanced.
More balanced. There you go. There's a much better. But do you think, Nicole, that is a possibility to get it done in, I mean, honestly, less than 4 months now with everything going on with all the elections? I mean, what is the feasibility of that to get it kickstarted and actually happen and implemented in time?
I do think that it's possible for this to get done before April. I know that I think it's the Wisconsin Business Leaders for Democracy, VWEC, is the court case that's challenging that. And they're taking steps. So I think the most recent update from them was that a 3-judge panel was finally appointed that will agree to hear the case. So it's moving forward. So I do think that it's possible that it can get done by April.
That would be huge.
I'm sure it's not going to be without its fights, too, because we saw a lot of fighting over the past how many years saying, trying to invoke the Constitution, Wisconsin, democracy, all those things, saying we can't redo these maps now because ... But you have to do them sometime. And if it's possible, at least to look at them, I think that's an important thing. It seems there are people out there who really want this to happen.
If you're just joining us on Matt and Air on Air, our guest is Nicole Gabriel. She is with the Fair Maps Coalition, a volunteer and the relational organizer. And we are talking, obviously, about maps in Wisconsin and most recently trying to get the House districts redrawn by April 8th. Two lawsuits, as you said, Nicole, are pushing forward with this. Is there anything that folks who are listening can do? I mean, other than possibly
apply
or, I don't know, reach out to the League of Women Voters? What can regular folks do about this if they would like to get involved?
Yeah, so there's a number of things they can do. So our website is fairmapswi.com. Again, shameless plug here, that's fairmapswi.com. So if you want to volunteer with us, please head over to our website and submit the volunteer form. We're also hosting presentations all across the state to educate people on gerrymandering in Wisconsin and also our proposal to implement an independent redistricting commission. So if you'd like to help us, help host us at your group, at your church, wherever, reach out to us and we can come around and do a presentation to you and your network. Another thing that people can do is that they can contact their legislators to pressure them to support this very important piece of legislation. So on our website, we also have a call script and an email template to make it easier for people to reach out to their legislators. And we also have some pointers on how to find out who your legislators are. And the last thing thing I want to mention that people can do is that, well, firstly, we are hoping to get this bill passed during this current legislative session. However, if for whatever reason this bill doesn't pass during this current legislative session, then we will be working with the governor, assembly members, and senators that are voted in during the general election next year. And so what people can do is they can go into the general elections knowing what their candidates' stances are on independent redistricting legislation, going to them, asking them point blank what their stances are on that, and then being prepared to vote accordingly.
If you are not sure who is your elected representative, there's an easy way to find out. It's called
very easy. It's a very easy website. MyVote.WI.gov.
That's it.
Go there and put in your information. It will tell you who represents you from the president down to the dog catcher, if that's the person you vote for. Also, you can find out your voting registration information. That's always important to keep up on as well. You want to make sure you are registered to vote in your proper district. But go to MyVote.WI.gov. Call, email. If you have the chance, maybe visit if they're around, but be respectful. Tell them that these are important things for you. And as you said, Nicole, I think that's very, very, it's very much a part of like who we look for in our candidates is who are the people who are going to bring the most most payoff for our voice, as far as like who will actually represent us in Madison, who will be the actual voice of the people. And those who want to run for office or for re-election have a responsibility to answer these questions, especially when it comes to the matter of fair maps, because I don't want to be doing this every few years. We just need a system that works and works for everyone.
Well, and I think it's important as well that politicians should be auditioning for us. Mm. We shouldn't be auditioning for them. They work for us. They are supposed to sell us on them.
Yeah.
That's their job.
Yeah.
I'm curious, Nicole, when you do go out into the community, are you hearing from all sides of the aisle? I can't imagine that every Republican thinks that gerrymandering is great, or do they? I don't know.
No, they don't. I mean, most counties in Wisconsin have passed non-binding referendums in favor of independent redistricting legislation. In fact, it might be every single county actually that has passed non-binding referendum. So we know that it's not just Democrats that disagree with gerrymandering. It's people from both sides of the aisle.
Yeah. And I think that's an important thing to keep in mind too, because I feel like this discussion can get so waylaid by the politics of it all to make it very talking point heavy. But really when we're getting down to the nuance of it all, this is about having a fair system which creates an election that allows all to run and, I don't know, be that, as I keep saying, the proper voice of the people.
Get involved. It's not too late.
No, it's not.
There's always time. We'll include links in our show notes to the Fair Maps Coalition. Nicole, Gabrielle, thank you so very much for joining us. Really, really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Have a great day. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Mock, our one, our only Calzone on the board, coming to you from our home at Radio Park in Racine. You can join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream. Good morning, live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up after the 10:30 news, she is the fabulous farm babe. Pam Yonke is going to join us. We're going to talk a little bit about the bailout Donald Trump announced yesterday, $11, $12 billion.
It'll be 16 by when it's all
by
said
the time
done.
It's done.
Yeah.
And they can start applying for it, from what I heard this morning, next month.
Okay.
So I would assume that by the time they get their payments, it's going to be 3 or 4 months.
I don't know. I mean, that's, again, long-term planning.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll talk to Pam Yonke about that. At least a little relief seems to be coming for our farmers. if nobody else. Yeah. Something we wanted to talk about quickly, because this is another thing that's kind of going underneath the radar with everything else that's going on. Mm-hmm. We did mention this Netflix deal.
Yeah.
It was just mentioned at the beginning of this week.
Yep. $82
billion. $82 billion yep. to buy Netflix. Well, now, this from the Daily Beast. Donald Trump and Jared Kushner's plot to turn CNN full MAGA is exposed. Donald Trump wants to see changes at CNN. David Ellison is the son of billionaire Trump buddy Larry Ellison. David Ellison is telling administration officials he'll make big changes to CNN if Paramount's hostile bid to buy Warner Brothers Discovery goes through. I know.
I mean,
the reason Paramount launched a $108 billion hostile takeover bid backed by Jared Kushner.
Because Jared Kushner is a part of this whole thing.
Exactly. After it lost out to Netflix in the bidding war for Warners, which owns Hollywood Studios, CNN, HBO, HDTV, a whole bunch of movie and TV shows. Mm-hmm. After news broke that Netflix bid to take over Warner would be accepted, Larry Ellison called Trump to warn that this would hurt competition, so just give it to us.
Well, they also told Warner Brothers that this will go a lot smoother in the process because you've got Larry Ellison, who is a friend of Trump, as well as his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, the man who does everything, apparently. So, yeah, this was within 24 hours of the Netflix deal being announced, because it hasn't gone through. No one's bought anybody yet. It will be months before anything officially goes through. But I think, it is very telling that they're not being secret at all about what, A, they want to do, and B, how they are going to do it. And it is by sucking up to the president, the administration, and by using his son-in-law to get there. So, I don't know. This goes back to the idea that eventually there'll be one company.
One media company.
Well, no, they're going to be one company. There'll just be one company eventually.
Which is not good.
No, it's not.
That's not good for any of us.
I was under the impression that a marketplace thrives with competition, and you can't have competition when there is none or there's very little, and all of them are owned by multi-billionaire conglomerates who are run by multi-billionaires to begin with. It just means that everything gets watered down, everything gets not great, and it's all about how do they make their money then, their clicks, their likes, their engagement, all that corporate speak, and not producing. I mean, look, if you're in a media company, your job is to produce good media, and they don't have to do that when there's no business across the street or you bought that business.
When they own everything. And I also, personally, this is a very Viktor Orban kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Viktor Orban, when he was elected in Hungary, essentially took over all the universities. Mm-hmm. And then he took over all the independent media companies.
Yeah.
And if we're going to have all buddies of the person in the Oval Office dictating the news we hear, the news we see, it's one big propaganda operation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not good.
Well, and propaganda is one thing, but also just the fact that I go back to, I want these companies to make good television and movies. I want them to actually want to create great programming, because that's the point of TV and movies, is to be entertained. And when they don't have to do that, and
You'll be happy with what we give you.
And also, let's also be honest too, I'll bet you a lot of money that most of the people don't even really like the guy, that they know they have to get in tight with him in order to do anything, and therefore they have to throw him a bone. Here's a prize. Here's a TV show. Here's an appearance. Here's a show. Here's a thing for your kid, your grandkid, like all that stuff. When they don't want to do it in the first place, they just want to do what they always do, is make money, and lots of it. And that is us once again sitting here as the people who are paying for it. We're the ones paying for it, by the way. They might be on the stock market, and they may be the billionaires, but it's our dollars that pay for their boats.
Speaking of our dollars.
Yeah.
Our dollars apparently going to be going to help out some of our farmers who have been hurt by Trump's tariff policies. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that and so much more on the other side. The fabulous farm babe Pam Jahnke is going to be joining us after the 10:30 news, so stay close. You are listening to Matt and Air on Air. We're coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go away. Good morning. Welcome to Matt and Air on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Bach, resident young person, Calvin on the board, coming to you from our home at Radio Park in Racine. You can join us. Call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. She is the fabulous farm babe because she's fabulous. Pam Jahnke is here. Good morning, my friend. How are you?
Hello, honey. How are you? Congratulations on 1 foot out the door. Appreciate
thank you. Yes, my final show Friday after 44 years.
But oh, my goodness.
I bet you've been doing it as long as you've been in broadcasting as long as me.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's the only thing I've ever done. I started I got a National Farm Broadcaster Scholarship in 86, which already dates me. And then I started working in 87 in farm broadcasting. I've been in Madison since 90.
Wow.
Wow.
You've been around a long time.
And I'm really kind of, you know, as many of us in the business would say, we're like dodo birds. You don't see many of us anymore that made a career out of being in radio and especially a farm broadcaster. I mean, that to make it through ownership changes and format changes and all that kind of stuff, I'm pretty blessed. So I'm still loving it.
Well, you perform a really important service, though, and everybody talks about how important our farmers are, and we give a lot of lip service to our farmers. You actually do it and cover things, I think, that are critically important, and you have a very important lane that you fill. You have a very important spot that you fill.
I thought it was interesting before the break talking about how thin journalists are in a lot of regards. Mm-hmm. You know, Greg, you were mentioning about entertainment, and now that's all of a sudden getting to be a pretty narrow batch.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's the same with farm broadcasters. When I started in farm broadcasting, man, I think I want to say there were somewhere in the neighborhood of close to 300 certified farm broadcasters across the United States. And now our numbers are down to about 190.
Wow.
Now, granted, the industry's changed. You know, I used to be on just one radio station. Now I'm on 38. So I get it. It's kind of like farms. Farms used to be, you know, 50 cows and 200 acres. Well, now farms are 1,000 cows and 1,000 acres. So it's kind of, it keeps up with the scale. But to your point, it's hard to cover a lot of those bases when you are just one.
Yeah, no kidding.
And I would say, you know, I have learned a lot over these past few years about the farmers here, the farming industry, and what they're really looking for. I would say, you know, and this question is for people on any side of the aisle who vote for whomever, what are the big points you feel like the non-farmers who say they support the farmers are missing in this world? What are we missing? What are we not seeing that really should open our eyes to see the struggle of what's going on in our farmlands here in Wisconsin and throughout the country?
Well, let's take, for example, the announcement made yesterday about the Farmer Bridge program. You know, we've been talking about that for months. So a lot of farmers in Wisconsin had already kind of factored in something's coming. And now one thing, I guess I understand my job as a journalist is to be Switzerland. I'm the middle of the road.
Sure.
I have no opinion. I should never give you an impression that I have an opinion. That, I believe, is my responsibility. And I kind of instill that in my staff, too. We are Switzerland. We have no opinion. So one thing I ask people to think about when they hear of these announcements, take it a little step further. One of my commodity brokers on the show this morning reminded people that almost 100% of the money that is going to be coming from the federal government, regardless of size, will be going to pay bills that are currently on our books. Mm-hmm. Everything has gone up as far as price, fertilizer, our herbicides, the seed, labor, diesel, everything has gone up, land rents. And I, as a farm kid, I'm absolutely serious about this. They will put that check in the bank and they will write a check to the co-op, to the seed dealer, to the petrol person, and it will be
gone
flat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It will be. Yeah, it's not like somebody's going to be riding around in an Escalade. It just doesn't work that way in agriculture. We are, in so many years, hand to mouth. All we're trying to do is get to next year, because we are eternal optimists. Next year will be better. Things will be better. And now remember, this this program also only covers in Wisconsin corn, soybeans, peas, oats, wheat. And I'm missing another one. Barley. There's only six commodities in this $12 billion, which yesterday Brooke Rollins, U.S. Ag Secretary, corrected Trump. It's $11
billion. Exactly.
Those six crops in Wisconsin are the only ones that are going to see any money. So our dairy faction is still waiting. Our pork producers are still waiting. Anybody that doesn't grow those six crops, like hay producers, pasture, is they're all kind of waiting. But then again, their markets, with the exception of dairy, I've got to say dairy has been impacted by the international stuff. But, you know, the other markets are a little bit less ruffled. So,
well, and you are a journalist and you have, I think, probably more lines into some, to the people who talk than we do sometimes. And beef has been a big problem for our American farmers. There's been a lot of talk, a lot of discussion from the administration about where we should buy beef. And then Brooke Rollins came out and said, we want to make it easier for people to become beef farmers. And I don't know about you, Pam. I don't know anybody who wakes up on a Friday and says, you know what?
I want to be a farmer. Cows.
Yeah. You know? So do you hear anything coming down the pike, any chatter about possible bailout money for the beef farmers who are definitely struggling as well? No, nothing at all. Okay. No. All right.
They're not struggling. They're not struggling.
They're not?
Not struggling. Beef is about one of the only sectors that's holding its own. And because our beef herd is so low, dairy has stepped into that fold with what we call beef on dairy. That is about the only upside for our dairy producers. They've been able to pay some bills because the beef market's good. So they're selling steers, they're selling cull cows, they're selling that to, so it's like robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Yeah.
I'll sell these beef animals to try to pay for my dairy cows for right now. And so, no, beef is fine. And to your point, we just had a story about how many young people and people in second careers want to do exactly what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to have a couple beef. I'd love to have a larger, you know, like maybe a farm market garden. There are a lot of people that would love to get in agriculture. Maybe not dairy, because that's a lot of overhead. Maybe not big cash crop unless you're connected with somebody. Mm-hmm. But if people can find the acreage, they'd love to have beef. They'd love to have sheep. We've seen how backyard birding has reconnected people with their version of farming.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of young people that would like to get involved in, I call them gardens, and I don't mean to be disrespectful. I'm lacking a phrase of, you know, the fresh produce market.
Mm-hmm.
There's a farmer mentor program going on right now where they're putting these people with farmers that have been in the business so that they have somebody to lean on when they have questions. So there are actually more people than you expect that want to get into agriculture. There's even more people, Greg, that work a second job so they can be in agriculture. And that is, I don't know how to explain it. If you live it and you're in it, you know it. Maybe it's the same way that we look at something like somebody that's just rabid about race cars.
Mm-hmm.
They are dedicated to their race cars, but it's not financially viable, so they still have to work an off-track job, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
A lot of those kinds of things that are happening, and production agriculture is another one where people want it so bad that they'll work a second job just to have it.
If you're just joining us on Matt and Air on Air, Pam Jahnke is our guest. She is the fabulous farm babe, talking among other things about the $11 billion bailout coming to some of our farmers. Going back to beef prices, Pam, the one thing I want to talk about, though, are the processors, because that seems to be the biggest issue as far as the cost of beef. Because tell me if I'm wrong, there are only like four processing plants in the country, so they control everything.
Well, they do control a lot. You're right. And that's why the president has said that he was going to make sure he was going to investigate antitrust. That's been something that groups like the Wisconsin Farmers Union have been asking for a long time. We just found out that a plant in Nebraska, a big Tyson plant, Nebraska beef processing, is going to close. Now, that had been talked about in the industry for a while because it's antiquated. It's an old facility. It's not efficient. And we just have to remember, at the crux of this is, we just don't have a lot of beef cattle. our beef herds are at historical lows, which has given dairy the chance. But and those processors suffer with those low numbers as well. They just can't make their plants run as efficiently as their equations are lined up to. So it's true. And I do find fault with the beef producers, or with the beef processors rather, especially when my beef producers aren't getting the money. But right now, beef producers are sitting on the happy side of the equation. And a lot of our producers that are, you know, the processors are a little bit more lean. So there's plenty of conversation going around about who did what and why, and who should be held accountable. And to your point, Greg, we are already getting small amounts of Argentinian beef and Brazilian beef in, but it's low, low, low quality. It's basically blended to keep your hamburgers at fast food restaurants cheaper so that you can afford them. Yeah. It's fine. It's safe, but it's never going to make a dent the way that has been promised would be the dent to bring consumer prices down. It just doesn't have the steam. People don't realize what a big industry beef is in the United States.
And I think it's an important reminder too, Pam. One of the reasons why our stock is so low is because a few years ago, there was a terrible drought that affected a big portion of the country. And a lot of our ranchers, it was cheaper to send their cows to slaughter than to try and feed them. It was simply too expensive.
They had to. And the other thing, Jane, it's kind of you and I talking. The average age of a rancher or beef producer is about like you and I.
In their 60s.
I don't know, kid, when you walk out the door, are you ready to jump in and get in high debt to replenish your beef herd and keep things going? So there's a lot of dynamics going on there. But yeah, like you said, the bottom line is between the snowstorms that have froze cattle to the ground, the drought, which provides no food at all, and now the new world screw worm in Mexico that allows us to not exchange cattle with Mexico, all of it comes together to really reflect in the beef prices you're paying today.
And that's, I mean, I guess that was the crux of the question is, will the, you know, any sort of relief that comes, because it seems like, I don't want to say the worst of it, but like some of the biggest effects are still yet to come with the screw room and everything. But will there be money set aside to help these 60 some year old beef herders who are just trying to make it if they have to, you know, make tough choices? They have to make tough choices every day, every year. But, you know,
they know that there has been talk from the administration that there will be some financial stimulus to try to help the next generation of farmers. Mm-hmm. But again, you really got to look at it enterprise by enterprise, commodity by commodity, and almost geographic region by geographic region. Because I'll tell you what, raising beef here in Wisconsin on a dairy operation where we've got all kinds of corn, all kinds of water, all kinds of space versus running them across government land in the Sierra Nevada and trying to keep them going there and put gain on them. Two very different business models. So I don't know, Greg, like I said, I know the administration has promised that they're going to try to help make those young opportunities for young producers.
We will see. She is the fabulous farm babe. It has been such a delight working with you and getting to know you over the years. Pam, thank you so very, very much.
Enjoy it right off into the sunset with your hair on fire, J-Matt. It has been a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Stay with us. We'll wrap it up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing, Testy Turkey Edition. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvitini on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. Join us at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Busy, busy show coming up tomorrow. Andra Watkins, New York Times bestselling author, is going to be joining us. Andra grew up in a Christian nationalist household, has some very, very interesting perspectives on the Christian nationalists who are now working in the Trump administration, Russ Vogt being among them.
And making a huge changes to the way our country runs.
Absolutely. So Andra will be joining us in hour number one. Hour number two, we've been moving things around a little bit because we have some other special guests who are going to be joining us later this week. So Jim Santel will be here, host of Amicus, a law review on Saturdays from 9 to 11. Lots of things legal to talk about.
Well, the Supreme Court right now making huge decisions to give the president even more power. That's something he wanted to discuss, and I feel like that's a huge issue, and it's,
Yeah, it's there's lots of big stuff. Yeah. Jim Santel in hour number two, Tony Lorino, he's a radio consultant, a friend of mine, and also a former colleague that I worked with for a long time. So Tony's going to join us for Audio Sorbet tomorrow. That is where we are right now, though. Calvin, 10:54. It's time for it.
This shouldn't be a thing.
If you ever find a thing you think should not be, make it quick. Send it in to Jane Says at civicmedia.us. J-A-N-E-S-A-Y-S. Jane Says at civicmedia.us. Local Tisbet for today.
Ooh.
From Wisconsin Public Radio, Rich Creamer with the byline. The headline reads, Gobbler Problem. After repeated attacks, Eau Claire to relocate troublesome turkeys.
Yeah.
City officials working with the USDA to stop menacing males that sent one person to the hospital.
What?
A group of aggressive male turkeys in Eau Claire generating police calls, causing one local resident to avoid a walking trail, and also sent a guy to the hospital with a one-inch cut to his arm. In May, an Eau Claire resident showed video on a local TV station in which two male turkeys were chasing a woman who's yelling behind her, I'm sorry. I'm
very
sorry.
Wisconsin.
Stop yelling at
it's
me.
Very
I'm sorry.
It's
sorry.
Very, very Wisconsin. It's very Wisconsin.
Another resident told the TV station the same birds chased him during a run. DNR gave the city some advice to share. They said, if you stand your ground, aggressive turkeys should turn tail and run. In this instance, that did not work.
All right. I'm going to put forth a little piece of information here, and I wanted to reframe the way we're seeing this whole thing.
Okay.
I don't think they're being aggressive, and I don't think they're unwarranted. America consumes 46 million turkeys a year on Thanksgiving alone. Doesn't this feel like some very forgiving payback? I mean, they're not going at us the birds style. They're just saying, hey, we see what you're doing.
We know what you did.
And I want to know what he went to the hospital for, too, by the way.
Gentleman that was on TV got interviewed. He said he stood his ground against the aggressive turkeys, kicked one of them in the head, which made it more aggressive.
Oh, shocking.
He ended up with a one-inch cut on his hands, had to go to the hospital to get a tetanus shot update.
Hmm.
Burgess said the city has now decided to relocate the turkeys, but where they'll go, no one knows. Some place where it's very unlikely they will encounter human traffic. They've been asked to look around the wooded area between this particular trail and the river so that they can drop a net to catch them.
I don't know why. I'm just on the turkey side right now.
You are siding with the turkeys.
I think if you're going to, well, first of all, don't kick a turkey in the head. Apparently that doesn't work. And also rude. And second of all, I would say this. If you're going to run away, I would just scream the following words. I understand your frustration, and I, too, feel bad for everything. And just keep on booking it back to your safe, warm house where your turkeys can't get to you.
I guess, Mike, because they have turkeys in Wauwatosa.
Yeah.
And I was there last week, and one turkey stopped traffic on North Avenue.
And Jane, what did you say your solution to that was?
Why can't we shoot them?
Yeah, there you go. What a fair-minded... Just a response.
We have turkey hunting season.
Oh, do you want to call Bill and get up all in his duds? Be like, hey, we got a turkey situation. Come on down to the corner of this and this, and blast it away.
Maybe it's I personally. Maybe it's I have a problem with their attitude. They're just so, what are you going to, what are you going to do?
No,
what
no.
What are you going to do?
They didn't provoke this. They didn't provoke this. They are the defenders. You are the aggressor. And I feel I stand up for turkeys. I'm with you, turkeys. Really, what I'm saying is, please don't attack me. Just know that I was always on your side.
City officials say turkeys living in larger cities get very used to people. Mm-hmm. And that can lead to issues when males are fighting for dominance during the mating season.
Of course it's dudes.
Natural.
Also, how do you get used to humans. I'd love to find that out. That's great.
There's a way to make that
like,
happen.
How do you get used to humans? I'm still trying to figure out how to get used to humans.
You're not used to humans yet.
Not lately.
He doesn't. You stop chasing people, though.
I won't go that far.
Okay. That wraps up today's episode of
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
Thank you, Greg and Calvin and all of our engineers and everyone at Civic Media, because without you, nothing works. And thank you most of all for calling and texting and watching on the live stream and for listening. It means the world. I hope you find some joy today and you have the chance to share it. Keep it here. We have news coming up next, followed by Tom Hartman, the next keyword for our multi-state text to win grown-up gift list contest coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow.
National news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.